Blog Talk Radio.
Guys, Sportsaholics 24/7. We are back with another live episode. I'm your host, John. Brandon and Jordan are off tonight, so I'm joined with my co-host, Nick. Nick, what's going on?
Hey, John. How's it going?
All right, so we have a great show for you guys. And as always, just a quick reminder, if you guys want to call in any questions, comments, whatever, the number to call in is 347-884-8496. So we have a lot to talk about. We'll start off in the NBA. We'll move on to a college football preview. And then we could talk a little bit about the New York Mets at the end of the show. Now, first of all, let's talk about the NBA. We're going to start off with the Knicks. And just when you thought things couldn't get any worse for the Knicks, they lose. And then, you know, Raymond Felton arrested on gun charges, possession of guns. I mean,
it's all right.
Can it get worse than this, Nick? Can it get worse?
It's only getting worse. Nothing's getting better. James Dolan is absolutely clueless. You know, like I said, I'm sure I've said this many times, but I really hope Raymond Felton shoots at his fiance, misfires, as usual, and hits James Dolan. He is pathetic. The fact that Mike Woodson still has his job is beyond me. The Knicks have a 21-37 record. They were supposed to be a playoff team. Now, all of a sudden, Mike Woodson's on the hot seat? Are you kidding me? He should have been fired 2 months ago. It is embarrassing. It's a disgrace. And you know what? One of the biggest problems with the Knicks is that when they lose by, like, a little bit, Dolan, the front office, Glenn Grunwald, everybody, they're always saying, oh, bad luck, it's okay, do better next time. BS. Because they have to make changes, and James Dolan's not willing to make changes. Clearly, Mike Woodson can't coach, and he won't even make any sort of changes.
Yeah, I know we've had this debate on the show before and many times in person, but I don't think that Mike Woodson is the issue here because, you know, they had a coach before, you know, plenty of coaches before them, and they all struggled with the Knicks in recent history. So clearly the one constant in all this has been the ownership and the leadership of this team, you know, the higher-up people, the GM, owners, those people. And you can't blame it on Mike Woodson because they were bad in the early 2000s. From early 2000s up until now, they have not improved much at all. So I don't think you could really blame Woodson. All right, maybe you want to fire him. Okay, I can understand why you'd want to do that. But I don't think the problem is with Mike Woodson. You have to look at the team. Partly. They're not that great of a team, player-wise. Pretty much just Carmelo scores a lot. And the front office is awful.
No, I agree with that. I mean, listen, everybody has to do with the problem. But you can't tell me Mike Woodson is not a part of the problem. Keep in mind, the Knicks lost to the Boston Celtics by 40 points when they didn't even have Rondo, okay? And they're getting blown out. Clearly, at home, clearly there's a problem with coaching. And how all the players are completely disinterested. Clearly there's a problem with coaching.
I think there is a problem, for sure, with coaching. However, it's not to the extent that everyone's making it out to be because, you know what, these are NBA players.
Okay.
And NBA players are the best of the best in the world. And obviously, if you have a guy like Phil Jackson – that's different. But nowadays in the NBA, there aren't many superstar head coaches. You look at a guy like Eric Spoelstra, you know, if he was with the Knicks, would he do any better than Mike Woodson? I don't know.
Because
he has a great team. They coach NBA players. These are NBA players that are playing. They shouldn't have to rely on a head coach to win games. No one in the NBA should be losing by 40, especially a team like the Knicks, who, while, like I said before, are not that talented, they have some pieces. They have Melo, they have Tyson Chandler, they had Raymond Felton. They have Iman Shumpert, Tim Hardaway Jr. is all right. So they should not be losing by 40 to anyone. But at the same time, you know, I do kind of agree with you. Mike Woodson's not the greatest coach, but you can't blame it all on him.
Well, I'm not blaming everything on him, but it's certainly a pretty big piece of the blame goes to him. I mean, keep in mind, people talk about how the Knicks have nothing to work with. They do have things to work with. J.R. Smith, former Sixth Man of the Year. Carmelo Anthony, one of the highest scorers in the NBA. Tyson Chandler, one of the best downhill defenders in the NBA. Iman Shumpert, one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA. They have the pieces. They have the talent. But Mike Woodson can't work with it. There's a lack of structure. The guy, and in the fourth, too many dumb decisions in the fourth quarter. It's just, you know what? Tonight against the Warriors, I hope they get blown out. Which they probably will. It's going to be an embarrassment. They're going to lose by 40.
I think if they do lose, I think it's too late this season to fire Mike Woodson. There's no point in doing that because first of all, I think, well, it's already past the All-Star break. The season is coming to the final stretch. And I think while the Knicks are, you know, really far back and they won't make the playoffs, I think maybe just, I don't even know, tank maybe? Try to get a good draft. Oh, well, they don't even have a draft pick, actually.
No, they don't have
a first-round
pick.
Yeah,
true.
And again, that's what I'm saying about their management. They have traded away so many draft picks, and in some of the Melo deal was pretty good, but they've traded away so many draft picks that they can't build with young guys. And it's disappointing because even though I really despise the Knicks, I'd like to see them do a little better since New York is such a great basketball city.
Yes.
But, you know, let's move on to the Nets now. And the Nets got blown out as well by the Portland Trail Blazers. The Trail Blazers did not have star center LaMarcus Aldridge or backup center Thomas Robinson. The Nets still lost by 44. But the next game, the Nets bounced
LaMarcus
back
Aldridge
and beat the Nuggets
forward.
By a lot. Oh, power forward, okay. So here's my honest opinion about the Nets. Jason Kidd had a quote after last night's game that really summed things up very well. And he basically said, you know, when we're playing at the top of our game, we can beat anyone in the league. And that's 100% true. Here's his quote. When we do play well and we play together and we trust one another, we can be as good as anyone in this league. And that's 100% true. Because they have all the pieces to do that. They have a mix of young guys and old guys, experience in the playoffs. They have shooters. They have big men. I think the Nets can actually make a run. Now, Nick, who do you think would be the best first-round matchup for the Nets, presuming that they do make the playoffs? Because I personally think that they will. If the Nets make the playoffs, who do you think that the Nets want to play?
Who do they want to play, assuming they do make the playoffs?
If they make the playoffs, you know, they'll probably be bottom half of the conference. So they'll play a top four seed. Who do you think that they want to play?
Wow, that's a very tough question. Certainly not the Pacers or Miami Heat. Maybe, you know what, one team that they might be willing to play would be the Raptors or the Wizards, because I personally think they have a much better chance of beating those teams than a lot of the other teams. I mean, I guess Miami Heat, they don't stand a chance because the Nets, they don't quite have all the pieces. And here's my reasoning. Who's their big man, your main big man on the Nets right now? Brook Lopez, right? He's hurt. Who's your next guy to really do that much in the paint? Who's your next guy who plays down low for the most part?
Blatch.
Who's your next guy? Andre Blatch. Plays a little bit. He's more high post, safe to say, right? He's a little more high post, power forward.
Definitely.
Yeah, and Kevin Garnett, he's 6'11", but he can't do that much down low. He's not built, like I said this before, he's not built like a center. He's built a little bit more like a small forward, power forward kind of player. Who's the guy who's going to do anything in the paint? Who's going to stop all the star centers in the league?
I think that the Nets tried to answer that question that you have right now. by signing Jason Collins. I mean, that's the best that they could have done. They tried to get Big Baby Glenn Davis, but they couldn't get him. And listen, Jason Collins is not going to shut down Dwight Howard, but I think that the fact that they have a bigger guy in case they need it is important. You know, they also have Mason Plumlee, who's young. He's tall, but he's still a little skinny. He could bulk up in a few years. But Collins is a guy that's big-bodied, tall guy. He could play defense and he could rebound. So maybe a lot of people saying that's a popularity thing for the Nets, but I genuinely think that they did it for at least partially basketball-related reasons.
Well, here's the thing, though. Out of all the teams, though, with the star centers, can Jason Collins really stop any of them? I mean, listen, not to take anything away from Jason Collins. I think he's a decent player, especially for his age. But is Jason Collins going to stop a guy like Roy Hibbert, Chris Bosh, even Marcin Gortat? Is he going to Marc Gasol? All the best teams in the East, they all have star centers, star big men down low.
Yeah.
That, quite honestly, nobody on the Nets is really going to be able to stop. They're going to struggle between, you know, Kirilenko, Plumlee, and Collins. And it's really not going to work out. They need to get that extra piece. Brook Lopez, I mean, he's got to come back, but you can't rush it.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be back this season.
No, probably not.
But it should be interesting because this is, you know, a lot of teams that can beat each other this season. So I'm excited for the playoffs. Now, before we move on to the next topic, as always, we appreciate if you guys call in. We have 18 minutes left in the show. The number to call in is 347-884-8496. You can talk about something we've talked about, something we're going to talk about, anything that we haven't brought up that you want to talk about, whatever. Call in, questions, comments. We'll take it. Now let's move on. Exactly 6 months from today, the college football season will kick off, and I'm so excited. I love college football. In my opinion, it's the greatest sport on earth. Everything about it, from the players to the fans to the tradition, it's a billion times better than the NFL. And, Nick, I know you disagree with me about that. College football is a great sport. And it is obviously 6 months ahead of the season, so there's not much we can talk about, in terms of factual stuff. It's mostly going to be opinion. But spring practice is right around the corner. National Signing Day just ended. Teams are starting to recruit for next year. Nick, what is the team that you're going to – what's a big storyline you're looking out for coming into spring ball?
Well, I know one big storyline would be a big recruit. I mean, listen, it's very hard for me to – I'm not Nostradamus. It's hard. I can't foresee in the future the college football season that's 6 months away. It's very vague.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I can see, of course, because I'm a huge pessimist, I can tell you what teams I think are going to be cracking down. They're going to be dropping. Auburn.
All right.
Auburn's
okay.
Going to be dropping. Texas A&M, considering they lost Kevin Sumlin and Johnny Manziel. And maybe, possibly, Alabama. Although Nick Saban could Alabama not as much because Nick Saban is such a great coach, but I certainly think that Auburn is going to be dropping down because they lost Trey Mason, who was basically the base of the team. Nick Marshall's success, a lot of his success, although he's proven himself a few times, but he can't do it that consistently. A lot of it was completely depending on Trey Mason.
Mm-hmm.
He did a little bit of running himself. He threw a few passes to players like Ricardo Lewis, you know, a few star receivers on Auburn. But for the most part, Nick Marshall really can't carry a team. His arm, I don't think he's consistent enough. He could run, but he's going to need more than that.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. Now, a few other storylines I want to bring up. I have two things I want to bring up. One, as you mentioned, Alabama, they lost A.J. McCarron, who's a Heisman candidate, going to be, in my opinion, a very good player in the NFL. So there's a competition going on. They just got a transfer from Florida State, Jacob Coker. He's transferring in there. He'll be competing for the starting job with a few other younger guys. So that's a big storyline. Another storyline, you know, I'm a big Penn State fan, and James Franklin, the new head coach, is absolutely killing it on the recruiting trail. Penn State, you know, still under sanctions. They already have the eighth best recruiting class in the nation. Okay, eighth. That is incredible. They can't go to a bowl game for another few more years, although, according to my sources, that bowl ban is expected to be lifted before the upcoming season. So next season, Penn State might be playing a bowl game if they qualify. But recruiting-wise, James Franklin's doing a great job, and I'm excited to see how Christian Hackenberg develops that quarterback. A lot of people have a sophomore slump. I'm hoping Hackenberg doesn't, and I think James Franklin brought in a great coaching staff. He's a great coach. So that's just another thing I'm looking out for. Now, Nick, again, really early, but who are some guys that you think could be some Heisman contenders next season?
Wow. Well, that's very hard to tell. I mean, I can tell you Jameis Winston is certainly going to be up there. Other guys, you know, whether they're leaving or staying, I mean, a lot of guys have left this year, so it's really hard to tell from all the way from here. Right now it's very hard to tell, but I can tell you Jameis Winston is going to be a contender.
Yeah, obviously, I mean, he won last year, so there's no reason why he shouldn't be.
Maybe it'll be a new recruit. Like before.
Oh, definitely. There are some great recruits coming in, and with this new trend, I mean, freshmen never won the Heisman before a few years ago, and now Johnny Manziel won as a freshman. Jameis Winston won last year as a freshman. So you never know with these incoming recruits now. There's a chance that maybe they can win the Heisman. For me, I think, you know, Jameis Winston, too, he coming back is going to be better. So I really think he's going to go out there and dominate all the teams that he plays. You know, the ACC, not that strong of a conference, and they don't have that strong of a schedule, Florida State. So I think there's a decent chance they could actually repeat, which is really difficult to do. But I think there's a chance for them to do that. Another guy that could be a Heisman candidate, a starting quarterback for UCLA, Brent Hundley, passing up on the NFL. He will come back for his final season in college.
Oh, he's coming back.
And, yeah, he's coming back. And I think this is a guy that a lot of people don't hear about because UCLA, since they play in the West Coast, plays late at night, and a lot of people over here don't get to watch those games. Brent Hundley is a guy that can run, and he has an incredible arm. So if you have a chance to watch a UCLA football game this season, I know when you hear UCLA, you think about basketball, but their football program's getting pretty darn good. So this is a guy that you have to look out for. He's kind of off the radar right now since a lot of people don't really know about him and don't really follow UCLA football that much, but he could be special.
Now, yeah, John, that's a very good point.
One last question about college football. I know this is incredibly early. We're probably like 10 months early in this, but pre-spring football, who is your national champion favorite?
Who's my national champion?
Yeah, just throw it out there.
I have no idea. I would say either Florida, from looking in a crystal ball, a very vague crystal ball, I'm gonna say either Florida State or Alabama, simply because Florida State has Jameis Winston. He can work well. He can work well with any type of receiver, which is one of the best things about Jameis Winston, and his agile is also excellent. And I would consider Alabama because they've always had a strong defense, and Nick Saban is one of the best college football coaches of all time.
Mm-hmm. Now, for me, I think Florida State definitely has a chance. But as much as it pains me to say this, I think the Ohio State Buckeyes have a pretty good chance as well. Braxton Miller, a guy we didn't talk about before, but he's definitely a Heisman candidate. And I think they do have a few games that they might lose. Obviously, they're a game against Michigan. They're always close. They travel to Penn State. That'll be a whiteout. That'll be a big game. And with the new Big Ten divisions, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how they fare against teams like Rutgers and Maryland, although those shouldn't be issues. I'm excited to see this upcoming college football season. Should be a good one.
Me too.
So once again, over 10 minutes left in the show. We're going to move on to most likely our final topic. But if you want to call in with any questions, comments, concerns, the number is 347-884-8496. Once again, 347-884-8496. Now, spring training is underway in the MLB, And a storyline that Nick brought up to me that's very interesting that you know, I have not heard ESPN talk about it, haven't heard Fox Sports talk about it really. What? WFAN.
WFAN.
Yeah. Basically, you know, Sandy Alderson says that the Mets will win at least 90 games. I'm not a Mets fan, and I know there are a lot of Mets fans out there that want to believe that. But I'm here to tell you right now that there is zero chance that the Mets come anywhere close to 90 games. Maybe 70 games, maybe. But I don't see any reason why they'd win 90. Nick, you're a big Mets fan. Any chance the Mets can pull off 90 wins, which will get them into the playoffs?
No. they have too many holes in there. Who is their shortstop now? Ruben Tejada? He's a freaking 12-year-old kid. How can you have him at shortstop? Who's your first baseman? Ike Davis? Or Josh Satin? Lucas Duda? How are they going to become a 90-win team? They don't even know what they're doing. The team right now is dysfunctional. They really are. They clearly don't like Ike Davis. I really don't think they're not going to keep Ike Davis, to be honest, mainly because they are looking to trade him. But the problem is he has no trade value. However, if he does play well during spring training, then he might gain some value, and then they'll trade him, which I don't necessarily agree with. However, I did bring up the story, which is more of a reason why they might trade him, is that Ike Davis was talking to a reporter about, and he told him about an injury he had. I forget what it was. I think it was something with his heel or his leg or something like that. Bottom line is he had some sort of injury that he was talking about with the reporter. And the reporter actually reported it. Ike Davis did not expect any of that to happen. And he was struggling with that throughout the season. So the whole story leaked, and me, along with a bunch of other Mets fans, are extremely pissed off at him because he could have just said, hey, I'm injured. You know, I want to do what's best for the team, so I'm just going to sit on the bench. And he was saying, I didn't want to say anything because I didn't want to make it sound like I was making excuses for my poor performance. Come on, man. We're not stupid. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't the smartest decision to become a Mets fan, but we're not that stupid. We know that it was because you didn't want to sit on the bench. You didn't want to lose your starting spot to Josh Satin or Lucas Duda, so you played through it. I know how an athlete's mind works. They don't want to lose their starting spot. That's why they play through injuries. That's the whole reason why. So me, along with many other Mets fans, are extremely pissed at Ike Davis. He batted like 110 last year or something like that. I don't understand how they could possibly get 90 wins. I mean, a lot of it also has to do with, this upcoming Mets season is somewhat unpredictable considering the new pitching staff. How do we know, how's Noah Syndergaard going to do? Henry Mejia, Zach Wheeler, John Neese, the entire Daisuke Matsuzaka, Vic Black, all these new pitchers, we don't quite know. They brought in a whole new pitching staff, so it's hard to predict how well they're going to play. Because Vic Black, for example, is not really such a big name. Zach Wheeler is still very young. He certainly has talent, but how do we know how well he's going to play?
Now, one interesting thing I want to bring up about the Mets, again, I don't think they'll come anywhere close to 90 wins, but I think they could be improved from last season. They obviously got Curtis Granderson, former New York Yankee, and Granderson's a guy that great in the outfield, and he's a very good hitter. And although, obviously, you know, Yankee Stadium, the right field's porch, is really short, and Granderson pulled most of his home runs, I think that he's a guy that can come in and spark the team and give David Wright some relief, because David Wright was the only guy that had any sort of production, pretty much, for the Mets last season.
Yeah.
And to touch on Ike Davis, when he first came up to the MLB, I thought this guy was, you know, he had the chance to be a star for this Mets team. He was really good in the beginning. But then last season, like you said, batting, 110 or something like that?
Yeah, it was awful.
Extremely, extremely disappointing. And not only that, if I was him, I would have 100% sat out. Here's why. Two reasons. First of all, you let your injury heal. If you don't sit out, you're playing your injury will get worse, plus you're going to play worse since you're injured. And second of all, it would have made more sense for the Mets for him to sit out because it'll give a guy, you know, a backup some playing time, and they'll see maybe this guy's pretty good. And even if they don't keep him, you know, whatever, even if he doesn't play, you know, maybe he'll have some trade value. So it's really a lose-lose for both sides of the situation. I know Ike Davis thought he was making the right choice, but now clearly...
I don't see how.
Clearly not making the right choice.
Absolutely not. And then, I'm just saying, the Mets are not going to win 90 games this season. I think they'll improve from last year because they have more, like you said, they have more pieces to their lineup. But one of the things I love about Grandy is that he's very fast, he's excellent around the bases, he's very good in the outfield, and he has power, which is excellent. So he'll bat like the two, or probably like the three spot, right? We'd probably be batting cleanup. That's probably how Terry Collins is going to work the lineup.
I think so. Because, listen, last season, the Mets, you know, I went to a few Mets games, watched a few Mets games. It wasn't that their defense was awful, but they had a lot of games where they just didn't score any runs at all. And
yeah, that's it.
You can't win when you score no runs, one run, two run a game. You can't. That's not possible. You can't win, especially 90 games. That's a big number. So if they're going to want to win, I think getting Grandy is going to help them out. They need to get that runs per game average up to probably around 4 or 5, I think, to get 90 wins, because no way you get it when you're scoring 1 to 2 runs a game.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, but also another big problem was their bullpen. I mean,
the
worst players, some of the worst pitchers I have ever seen. I mean, during the past 5 years of the Mets, they have had some of the worst. New guy, his name is Gonzalez Hermann. I have not seen this guy throw a strike, yet they still keep him on the team. The Mets should be paid to keep this guy on the team. I don't even know why they still have him. One thing I do like is that Sandy Alderson is actually getting new relief pitchers, but some of these relief pitchers that they've brought in these past few years have been absolutely awful. I mean, that's who's been losing the games for them. R.A. Dickey a few years ago should have had somewhere between 25 and 30 wins because of these horrible relief pitchers blowing the games for them, such as Manny Acosta and John Roush, all these horrible, despicable pitchers.
The bullpen is such a difficult thing to be good at because there are so many pitchers you need to have in a bullpen, and they're not like they're going to be star players. Besides, you know, you have Mariano Rivera, obviously, some other guys, but these are guys that have to just be reliable, and it's really tough to find a reliable guy because you can't really give them a lot of money because they're bullpen pitchers, so it's tough. We have just about 2 minutes left, and very quickly, some breaking news. Danny Granger to the Clippers.
Yep.
Nick, is this a good fit?
Yeah. I don't see why not. I don't see why he can't be a decent small forward on the team. They could pair him along with Matt Barnes. I mean, the Clippers, they can be an excellent team. They just need a few more pieces. I don't see why not. At least the Sixers finally came to their senses and said, it's not worth keeping Danny Granger. If we're going to lose, you better lose in a cheap way instead of an expensive way.
I agree with you on that because I think the one piece that the Clippers are missing, and I was thinking about this a few days ago, the Clippers have a great point guard, great power forward, a very good center, good defensive team, but they don't have a guy that they can go to on every possession and just take someone one-on-one. They don't have a guy that can hit threes, really. So I think by getting Danny Granger, while he's not that great of a defensive player, that's not where they needed the help. He's a very good offensive player, and because of this, I think this makes him a legitimate contender in the West, because before this, you know, there were teams like OKC. And you look at OKC, they could score the basketball. And that's where you need to win games. And the Clippers, by getting Danny Granger, that should get him plenty more points per game, and that should really take him to the next level.
Yeah, I absolutely. I mean, they definitely made the right decision because that's basically the hole in the team. That's exactly who they're missing.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to wrap up this show now. Nick, thank you very much for being on.
Thank you.
Thank you all for listening. We'll be back soon with another episode.